You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our very special deep dive interview with the winner of Big Brother Canada 9. It's Ty. How you doing, Ty?
I'm good. How are you doing, Taryn?
I'm doing great. I am, of course, your host, Taryn Armstrong. Very excited to be here with Ty. What we are going to do here is we watched all the way through Big Brother Canada 9. We saw all of the twists and the turns and the exciting nature of the entire season. And now I'm here with Ty to talk through it all, talk through his game as he went through the game in Big Brother Canada 9. So I'm very excited, Ty, because not only was this a great season, but you were a very fun player to watch. You often kept us on our toes in terms of where your head was at. So this should be very fun to get an idea of where you were.
I'm excited because I guess I didn't talk to the cameras, and I know that might have been an expectation, but now I guess I can tell you what I was thinking. So I'm excited about that.
There you go. Yeah, not enough people talk to the cameras, although sometimes it doesn't work out for them. Can you tell me, how much, knowledge of the show did you have coming in? Did you study up at all? Did you watch seasons? Like, what was the preparation like?
So for me, the preparation, I did watch a few seasons, 6, 7, 1, 2, and partially 3. But I don't think... I have this issue with my short-term memory. So when I watch something in the short term, I don't really remember it. So I was having trouble remembering comps and remembering, exact details about who was who. But I did have a general understanding of what to expect and what I should know. And one thing I did retain was that I need to know my days. If anything, I need to know what happened on what day. And that was one of the things that I focused on going into the show. Knowing my days based on what I watched before.
Yeah. Did you have much of a game plan in terms of how you were prepared to operate socially or strategically?
Yes, I would say my game plan was very general. So when I think about my game plan, I said to myself, I'm going to listen more than I speak. I'm going to establish a relationship with everybody. And I'm going to be dynamic. So as the game changes, I have to be open to change. If one of my alliance members get cut, I can't just harp on that and continue to play the game the same way. I have to be willing to change as the game changes. And then my last thing was having an alliance. I wanted to be part of a diverse alliance that would be able to penetrate different areas of the house. So I ended up being in one, but that was one of my goals as well.
Yeah, well, heading into the game in the very first week, that is the week that we unfortunately have the least amount of knowledge about because the feeds are not on for that first week of the game. It seemed like there was a lot going well for you that week. You enter the game immediately. Kiefer and Tina are going to pick teams. You're divided into these two teams. The teams worked out well for you. You were immune for these first 2 weeks. Basically the sort of cliff notes of what we know about this week is that you're going to end up in an alliance called the Sunsetters. You also have kind of a little bit of a side alliance going on with Beth, Jed, and Austin. And you know, the Sunsetters are essentially running the house, and I'm not sure when these things exactly come together, but can you tell me, like, you enter the game, what's happening? Where do you go? How are these things forming?
So I enter the game, and the way I saw it at that time was I established a really quick, strong connection with Jedson. Like, initially, we're like, you know what? We're going to the end together. It doesn't matter what happens. You're my guy. So I already had that established. And then after really connecting with Beth, we had decided that, you know what? Me, Jedson, Austin, and Beth would be a good final four to keep together. And once we established that, I'm like, you know what? This is how we're going to play this game. But mind you, we come in not understanding the game in itself. It's just like, we're just here excited, mm-hmm. making promises to everybody. We don't fully understand where we're going, what direction we're going in.
Yeah, for sure. So did the Austin and Beth alliance come before sort of the Sunsetters and Toya?
I want to say I wouldn't say it came before, but it was something that we also were establishing, you know, maybe simultaneously. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was necessarily a priority to me, but I know I wanted to be good with Austin because Austin wasn't in the same conversations. A lot of the conversations I was having initially in the game and a lot of the connections I was building, Austin wasn't included in those connections and those relationships. So I want to ensure that I had a relationship with Austin so that whatever I wasn't doing on my side, she would be a part of. So I think it was just really important to have Austin at that point.
Mm-hmm. I do remember some conversations Kiefer would like to talk about a lot on the feeds about how Beth was the last person brought in to the Sunsetters. I know Jed had a conversation with Beth where he said that he was essentially the one that got her in. How true was that? Was Jed the one that said, hey, we should pull Beth into this?
That is 100% true. The reality is that, well, you know how Jed is. Jed plays the game with his heart, and him having a crush on Beth, I think, was part of him being like, listen, I can do this for you. I can bring you into something big. And he brought her into the Sunsetters. I think it was a good decision. Yes, at that time, I thought Beth would have been a great addition to our crew. We needed somebody like Beth who can work with lots of different people. Having the personality that she has, I think she was a perfect addition. I don't think Jed did a really good job of running it by us and really consulting us before he made that decision. Mm-hmm. But I still think it was a good decision nonetheless. But the reality was, I think that was Jed's move of being like, here, Beth, like, let me do this for you. I'm the guy for you. Yeah. But it also was a good decision. She was a great addition to the alliance. I'm not denying mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
And I know LaToya at the time had her reservations, and so did Kiefer about Beth, but then they got over them. They're like, you know what? Beth is actually someone we can trust. Mm-hmm. But it actually turns out she wasn't in the end, but they really believed that Beth was someone that was down for our cause. And she was at the time. So, I mean, to a degree.
Yeah. You know, I think it might have been the first night of feed, so I'm skipping ahead a little bit here, but you had a conversation with Toya where you expressed some suspicion about Beth. And at the time we were like, what's real here? Is he with Toya or is he with Beth? Cause you also had this like final two conversation with Beth, like the day after. And so it was like, were you really suspicious of Beth here? Or were you just sort of anticipating that Toya was already suspicious of Beth and telling her what she wanted to hear?
So, you know what? To be real with you, Taryn, I was always suspicious of Beth. Beth gave me a vibe that, I don't know, I just trusted my gut on this one. She was just very, I knew that in the end, she would backstab and do whatever she took to win. Beth gave me this vibe that she'd always be ruthless. Like, she didn't, her heart wouldn't be, she wouldn't make decisions based off emotions. She would always do things that were best for her game, no matter what it was. And I sensed that pretty early. I don't know what it was about her. But it was something about her. I'm like, this girl is ruthless. She'll do whatever it takes to win this game. And I knew that very early. So in telling LaToya that I was trying to establish that, listen, Beth is ruthless.
Mm-hmm.
And in saying that, I'm not meaning that she'll burn us, but she'll burn people in order to get to the end of this game. And I just needed to have that out there, that we're on the same page, that she'll do whatever it takes.
Yeah. So back in week one, one of the big events that is referred to a lot is day three. Something happens with Josh. I'm sure it's been talked about at this point, but it was definitely something that everyone is very confused about, because it wasn't really in the episode so much. So what happened with Josh? Because by the time the feeds came on, he was a complete pariah in the game.
So I wasn't actually there when we saw what materialized with Josh, but the reality was Josh, he started the game. If I'm going to give anybody credit for starting the game, we were, before live feeds were turned on, we were on this whole kumbaya vibe. We all loved each other. We're like, you know what? We don't want to see anybody go home. Mm-hmm. We're just going to stand in solidarity. But Josh changed that whole dynamic when he started the conversation about a Pretty Boys Part 2 alliance with me, Kyle, Jensen, and Rohan. He came up with this idea that me, Kyle, Jensen, and Rohan were working together. And that kind of scared a lot of people in the house, because this whole guys alliance was something that we saw in season 7 that was very successful, where they picked off everybody as this guys alliance. And I think that really scared everyone. So in starting that, Josh started a conversation about game. And once we established that this was not true and this was a lie, I think that's when really the game started. Josh and Julie were pushing this notion that there was an all guys alliance. And as we pushed back, we realized that, wow, people are really starting lies and starting rumors. And that started the game.
Now, was Josh somebody that was already being looked at as the first boot prior to that? Or was it really that, like, who was the target prior to day three?
I want to say Josh may have been the target. Based on the conversations I was having, the way we established the game was that, you know what, Team Destiny won. Mm-hmm. So it was up to Team Defender to come up with a person that they wanted to evict. We left it on them. We weren't going to have a say. We didn't want any blood on our hands. So we're like, you guys let us know who you want to go home and we'll vote accordingly. And up until that point, Josh was probably one of the people that was Josh and Julie were one of the people that we were considering. Maybe Rohan a little bit, but it was Josh and Julie. And I think Josh, by doing what he did, wanted to change maybe who that target may have been. By establishing that Pretty Boys Part 2, which was like maybe a good play on his part, but it didn't necessarily work out in his favor down the road. But I think he wanted to shift that focus onto Rohan. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that worked out well for him, but I think that was the goal of that whole plan.
And ultimately, this vote ends up flipping on Julie. We heard a lot about this from Toya, that, you know, sort of last minute she decided, you know what, it's the right move to take out Julie instead. And you know, pulled people into the bathroom, I think it was, and flipped the votes. How involved were you in that whole thing?
I would say like my involvement in that plan was pretty minimal. I wasn't really invested in it, to be real. Like, it didn't really have an impact on me. Who went home from Defender, I didn't really care. Mm. The reality was Julie and Josh weren't, I didn't really establish a strong relationship with either of them. We've had conversations, but I didn't have a strong game relationship with either of them. So I was kind of indifferent who left. I just thought of that decision being a Team Defender kind of decision. The reality was is that people really thought Julie would be a bigger threat later on in this game than Josh would. And I would agree with that. Julie had very, like, she had this strong personality. She was okay with being in drama. She was a big brother player. So to see her go far in this game was a little bit worrisome for a lot of us. I wasn't really invested either way. I thought it was too early for me to invest myself in any decisions. And once LaToya made up that mind, she was on Team Defender. I'm like, if you, if that's what you want, I'll vote that way. We work together. That's your team. That's what you want. That's how I'll vote. Yeah. That's as involved as I was.
Well, Austin is going to win the following HOH, but not before Kiefer is going to sort of root against her in the HOH competition pretty publicly. Which is going to put you and Toya and the Sunsetters in a bit of a tricky spot, but you do have this side alliance running. So you're pretty good. It's just a matter of like, how do we keep Kiefer safe? And right away, Josh being there, it barely requires any convincing. Austin is willing to put Josh on the block and subsequently change her target to Josh over the coming days. A lot of that work done, I know, by Toya. This is when the feeds come up, and this was a portion of the game where it felt like you were in a very, very crushing position, because you had the Sunsetters, which were a secret majority alliance. You had you were in a side alliance with the current HOH. She was trying to pull in Brayden, and you guys were kind of like, do we need Brayden in this side alliance? And everyone is kind of coming to you, and you had branches out everywhere, and it was looking like, okay, this is the beginnings of what we often see in Big Brother, which is these big secret majority alliances dominating the game. How comfortable did you feel at this point?
I would say I was very uncomfortable at this point, because the reality was the Sunsetters were a majority alliance, yes. But two of us were on the block, which was concerning. Having LaToya and Kiefer on the block, you never want two of your people on the block. So that was my first concern that made me uncomfortable. On top of that, like you mentioned, like you had a side thing trying to happen with Austin, where she was trying to bring in Brayden. And it seemed like we're at a point where I was stretched thin in terms of promises I could make. My interest with Austin and Brayden could never align with the interests of LaToya, Kiefer, Jetson, Beth, Tina, and myself. Like, I didn't see how those interests could ever align in a way that would work for my game. I would come off as inauthentic. I didn't want to be inauthentic, right? So I wanted to play this game in a way where I was authentic, honest, and loyal. And it was getting to a point where I can't promise everybody everything. Mm-hmm. So I would say I was uncomfortable at this point, because it's like, I can't please Austin and then please the Sunsetters. It wasn't possible at that point.
Yeah, it seemed like that was a conflict for a lot of the Sunsetters, actually, because it's around this time in week two where Kyle and Ro start to realize something's wrong. We do not have the numbers, and they start pitching that, okay, they're concerned that your side alliance is actually the real alliance. They think that this thing is the thing that's going to run the whole game, and they're concerned that you, Jed, Beth, Austin, and Brayden are this big alliance that they need to gather numbers against. And so they try and pull in Toya and Tina and Kiefer and Tara. And unfortunately for them, you know, three of those five end up turning them down straight up, pretty much. Toya immediately tells you guys. Kiefer ends up telling you guys. And Tina's kind of the only one in the group that's kind of like, I mean, this is not bad for me if they want to work with me. And of course, Tara is willing to take what she can get at this point. But of course, this is going to get ratted out to you guys, because they approached the wrong people. They had the wrong read on the house. And you know, at the time we were looking at Toya's game, we were like, oh, Toya, like, why aren't you accepting this? Like, you can play them. Like, this is sort of like an opportunity, perhaps. But it did seem like it, again, consistently, except for perhaps Tina, every member of the Sunsetters was so loyal to the Sunsetters that you actively turned down other opportunities to work with other people because you didn't want to divert your loyalty or spread yourself too thin.
Yeah, and that was the messaging that was consistent with the Sunsetters. It was like, we're loyal to the soil, we protect our people. And in doing that, it's very difficult to protect your people and try to protect other people. Kyle and Rohan's misread of the house does not surprise me, because that extended beyond week two. Reality was, nobody knew the Sunsetters existed. That was the whole point of the group. We wanted to be diverse. We wanted to be unsuspecting. And it was perfect in that sense, because people saw, you know, me, LaToya, and Jed, or maybe me, Jed, and Beth as maybe separate things. But the whole group in itself together was never something that was suspected. And that was the beauty of it. That was the reality of it. It was that we didn't want anybody to ever know. And I think it took a long time for anybody to ever realize, which was what contributed to a good part of the success of the group in itself. That was a strong alliance because nobody knew about it.
Yeah, there were. So another person that approached you to work with them was, of course, Vic this week.
Yes.
And you guys did kind of say like, yeah, we'll do something. And Toya had sort of preliminary conversations with Vic, but never really locked anything down, which, of course, is going to come back to haunt you in the coming week. Did you ever seriously consider like locking something in with Victoria at this point, or did it just, again, feel like you'd be stretching yourself too thin?
Victoria is one of the few people actually that I did want to work with. In meeting her, there was just a vibe she gave off where I felt like she would be loyal to me at least. And Jed, I felt like in meeting Victoria, I'm like, you know what? She won't burn us until she really has to. So she was someone I did want to work with. It was LaToya that really didn't want to work with Vic. The reality was their personalities didn't match. Mm-hmm. Like LaToya is a very straight shooter. She keeps it real. She's honest. She's not fake at all. Victoria gives you very fake vibes. Like she'll, you know, laugh with you, joke with you, smile with you. Maybe even if she doesn't want to. And LaToya is not at all like that. So it's like their personalities were just complete polar opposites, and working together with both of them didn't seem like something we could do out in the open. So I always wanted to ensure that that relationship I had with Victoria was always one that I could go back to and be like, hey, I want to work with you. But at that time, I couldn't work with her on a serious level with LaToya being included, because that just wouldn't, it wasn't a reality. LaToya did not want to work with her.
Yeah, and I mean, for what it's worth, she had been pitching to Austin that she wanted Toya up on the block before she even came to you guys about wanting to work together. So it was probably the right read. I don't know if anything you would have done that would have necessarily changed that target. But we are going to see the big event of week two, and this is really what kicks off the entire season of excitement and back and forth, is that you guys consider flipping the vote. And it comes from Kiefer, and it's when he's talking about Kyle and Ro and how they're coming for you guys, which was true. And he feels like, maybe it would be a good idea, you know, he has now won the veto, Ro is on the block. It may be a good idea to take out Ro instead of Josh, just like you guys did with Julie. And so of course you guys consider this idea. Tina is the one that shuts it down initially. Because I would imagine, again, she had that offer from Kyle and Rowe, and she felt like it would be useful for her to have them on board. So it gets shut down initially, then it comes back. Can you tell me about the decision process here? Because this was, in some ways, the first major event that, again, we saw in the feeds, but also one of the big things that ultimately, in some ways, causes the downfall of the Sunsetters.
So I want to say, like, this decision was, again, I wasn't as invested in this decision as you would think. Mm-hmm. The reality was, I did think Rohan and Kyle would come first at one point, but I wasn't willing to openly campaigning against Rohan's thing. As you can imagine, we were very inexperienced in how this game works at that time. And we did consider, I was very adamant about Rohan going home. But at that time, it seemed like we'd have to mask votes in order for that to happen. So votes like Bess and Kiefer's would have to be masked somehow as anonymous, because the reality is Kiefer had a relationship with Kyle and Rohan at that point, and Beth had a relationship with Austin and Brayden. So their votes could not have come on our side because they would be exposed for being on our side. Mm-hmm. So we didn't know how to operate within those parameters at that time. And I was kind of truthful about that. I remember in having a conversation with Tara and Tina, I'm like, well, we need your votes because we can't use Beth and Kiefer because Beth and Kiefer have to vote with the other side. And in telling them that, they were like, wait a second. So they get to hide their votes and we just expose ourselves. And they weren't down for that at all. So I didn't realize people wouldn't be down for other people to hide their votes because my lack of experience playing Big Brother was my first time. So the decision itself wasn't a tough one. I thought Rohan needed to go at that point, but I didn't understand how to make that happen, how to manipulate people in the right way, how to ensure that that happened, because we thought votes needed to be masked and things. We shouldn't have told anybody. Everybody should have just voted how they were voting. Rohan would have went home and nobody would have known who would have flipped. And that's what should have happened. But because we talked too much, we gave too much information out, and people weren't down for the flip. And that's essentially why Josh ended up staying. And then on eviction day, LaToya was adamant about this flip happening because she knew Rohan and Kyle weren't good for our games. But the problem was, when you're trying to pull people into rooms on eviction day, it's just very obvious. So it became very obvious that we were trying to do something. And LaToya, Jed, myself, Beth, got caught in that crossfire of trying to make something happen. But in reality, it wasn't that serious to me. If Rohan stayed in the game, I was like, well, he's not great for my game, but I'll figure it out. But I ended up being caught in a situation where I could have been held responsible for that kind of flip.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it ends up being worst of both worlds here, because Ro ends up staying, and in the process, everything mostly got exposed anyway. Of course, they don't know that the Sunsetters exist as a concept, but they at this point have realized, hold on, it's not Ty, Jed, Beth, Austin, and Brayden. It's Ty, Jed, Beth, LaToya. They are a four at least. Kiefer must be with them because he betrayed us too. And Tina's the only one that comes out of this clean. And she's going to ride that wave for a while in the game. And Kyle and Ro are going to take the opportunity to then bond with Austin and Brayden, and they become what they become. So a bit of a mess left here with all of this. Now this indecision, it's not going to be the last time that it happens in the game. It definitely seemed like the sort of consideration of all sides was definitely, we talked about it during the season. In some ways, it's definitely a strength of yours and of any players. But it came to a point where we wondered, at what point are you considering all sides too much?
Every situation, you're making a very difficult decision. And you've got to weigh the pros and cons of every decision as you see it. And every decision had pros and they had cons. And we need to go back and forth to ensure that we're making the right decision. In a lot of scenarios, we ended up making the right decisions because we went back and forth. The other thing I always said is, when we get soft, that was a statement I always made. When we get soft, we end up screwing ourselves. We got soft on the Rohan decision. I think Rohan should have left at that time, but we were soft. We were scared to make the move. We didn't know how to make it. We were consulting everybody. We were trying to massage everybody and be like, hey, this is what we want to do. We were soft. And the reality was, we ended up going home, and that burned us. So in going forward, in the decisions we made, we had to be real. We had to consider both sides, but we couldn't be soft. When we talk about the Kiefer decision later, that's another decision where we got soft. And that came back to bite, not me, but it came back to bite someone because we were soft. Yeah. So the reality was, we did have to consider both sides, but make the right game decision, not the emotional one. And I don't think we ever made mistakes because of that, because all the decisions were right except a few. But I think for the most part, we got decisions right because we were very thorough in our consideration.
Okay. So ultimately Josh is going to go home here, and Victoria is going to win the next HOH. And this is where it looked like a disaster for the Sunsetters here, as again, you guys are mostly exposed. Victoria is now the HOH. She wants to target LaToya. Now, she does have, you know, Kyle and Ro and them in her ear trying to like, hey, but what about Ty or Jed? But she's pretty set on Toya. And this is not good, obviously. And she's going to want to use Kiefer as a pawn, which again, unfortunately, means that you can't use your numbers to protect either one of them. And this is when the oddballs form together under Victoria's HOH, and it's essentially a 7-person alliance against you guys with two of you on the block. Things are not looking great here, Ty.
Not at all. You know what? At the time, I don't think I realized how grave our situation was. During the HOH in itself, I understood that. I didn't understand much. Victoria is trying to tell me that Kiefer is her target. That didn't make any sense to me, because I'm like, yeah, Kiefer, you know, told a lie about you, but that's like that's revenge. Mm-hmm. Revenge being your target never makes sense to me in this game. This game has to be about what advances your game, what helps you. The reality was, I thought LaToya was her target the whole time. That's what I really believed in my heart. And I was being told otherwise by everybody. And it was confusing me, because I'm like, it wouldn't make sense for you guys not to get LaToya out. Mm-hmm. But you guys are going to the moon to convince me that Kiefer is the target. And I was actually genuinely confused, because I'm like,
yeah,
you guys would be stupid not to get out of LaToya.
Yep. You had that conversation with Beth. You're just like, I don't understand. I mean, I guess it's what they're doing, but I don't understand it.
Didn't make any sense. But it's like they really went out their way to convince us that that's what they're doing, which also made no sense in my mind, because it's like, we don't have the numbers. So you guys can just do what you're doing and we can't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
The reality was, I don't think they understood the numbers as well as I thought they did at that point.
Well, I think I would probably say that it came down from Victoria, that she really wanted to keep it a secret. As part of, you know, her ultimate, you know, master plan, which was to get out LaToya and then pull you guys in, and blame it all on Beth somehow. There was a lot being done that week for sure. But yeah, she really wanted to keep you guys in the dark, and that's, you know, she has that conversation with you, when Jed wins the veto. Which I mean, I felt for you guys in that conversation, because she was essentially telling you, look, I know I promised I wouldn't put either of you on the block, but you said that I was like good at competitions and like really smart. So basically, oh, because you said that, now, I mean, it's all on the table at this point.
When she did that, my gosh, that's when I was like, oh, this girl's ruthless. She'll use anything. That's when I was like, oh, no. Okay, watch. One day, you're going to pay for this. And I don't know when it's going to be, but you're going to pay for this one day. Because, like, you tried to really say, I called you a comp beast in front of the house, and this is why things have changed?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no. You're going to pay for this one day. I don't know when it's going to be. We're going to have we have a bone to pick. But you know what? Right now I'm trying to convince you that I want LaToya down, and I don't want to go on the block, and I'm going to do what I can, but she will pay for this one day. Because that's when I learned that Victoria will say and do anything. Mm-hmm. That's when it became clear to me. She can lie, she can manipulate, and she'll do anything. And that's when I came to that realization, and that's when I became really concerned about her as a player.
Yeah, and then after the veto ceremony, she had the audacity to tell you that she wouldn't have put you up if Jed had used the veto.
That's when I was like, okay, you know what? You've gone too far now. You lied to us and tricked us because you wanted LaToya out. And you should have just told us you wanted LaToya out and there's nothing we can do, and left it at that. But you jerked us around and played this whole game and did this little dance. And I'm like, don't worry. One day you will pay for this. I don't know when it'll be, but you will. And she did.
She did.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So it's around this time that, you know, Kiefer is going to, with Tina and Tara, form what they call the pre-90s alliance, which is this middle group. And they are going to be the sort of the best positioned players for a long time in the game because nobody's coming for them. And they have a lot of power being in the middle in the way that they are. You do see this, though. You don't see the alliance necessarily, but you see that the players like Tina and Tara are going to be able to just kind of get a free ride for a long time in this game if there are going to be two sides taking shots at each other. And it seemed like from this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like from this frustration, you were kind of like, I would really love to be able to call some kind of truce with Kyle and Roe. So that we don't have to waste our time taking each other out. We can take out these other players that are going to get a free ride and then all kind of make it further in the game. But you got into some arguments with Toya about the sort of efficacy of that plan.
Yeah, I don't think Latoya did not believe we could ever trust Kyle and Roe. And the reality was I was very concerned that typical Big Brother seasons, you would see the moms, the dads, the chefs of the house, they go home first. And this season, that wasn't the case. In this season, they were standing back and watching all the young people aim at each other and target each other. And I recognized that, and I tried to explain. I'm like, listen, we don't have to play this way. We can take them out and go after each other later. Toya didn't believe we could ever trust Kyle and Roe. And Kyle and Roe did have a strong relationship with Tina and Tara at that time. They were smoking together. There was something going on where it was bigger than just them cracking jokes together.
Yeah, they'd made the oddballs.
Exactly. And Latoya did recognize that we can't trust them, and you having a conversation with them doesn't mean much. And it really didn't. I just thought it was worth a shot in the dark to try to build something, but I get her reservations. There was no establishing a relationship with them. And the game was where it was. It is what it was. It just wasn't. Kiefer, Tara, and Tina were going to stand back and watch us all target each other. Yeah. And that's just what it was at that time.
It really was. ultimately, you know, again, you kind of saw that it was the move. But you had been told so often that it wasn't. Ultimately, we do see a blindside, pretty much the only blindside vote of the season. 6-3, Toya goes home, Kiefer stays. And what are you thinking in this moment? Because a lot happens at once, right? Because, you know, that day, Victoria had gone to you and Jed to sort of lay the groundwork for her Blame Beth plan. And then she tries it that night. But it does, it kind of falls flat. And it's like, what is going through your mind at this point?
A few things. Like, obviously, I was very irritated with Tina. Tina was on the top of my list of people I was irritated with because she was in the Sunsetters. And I asked her how she was voting that day, and she lied to me. Number one, I thought that was very unnecessary because it's like, if you were voting this way, you should just tell me. And we're in an alliance. If you didn't want to vote with the alliance, just tell me that you're not voting with our alliance and why. And she didn't do that. So once I was betrayed by Tina, I was like, okay, this is very frustrating because we were blindsided essentially for no, we didn't have the number. That's why, like, I just keep reiterating, like, we didn't, there were three of us versus six of them. So that made it clear to me that it was 6-on-3 because they did not want to tell us that LaToya was going home. I didn't get to say goodbye to LaToya in the way in which I wanted to. And then you realize the whole house is against you. Then you see Victoria blaming Beth. And now I have questions about Beth and what her involvement was. So there was like, I was just confused in so many different ways of why we weren't told, what was Beth's involvement, and why is Tina not honest with us? Because we were clear about us being loyal no matter what. It didn't seem like she was, that message really registered with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think at this point, Tina had, she had decided with Tara, like, you know what? We're just going to ride the middle. And I think you sort of recognized that as well, that, that, you know, they weren't necessarily going to be, fully with you guys anymore, at least Tina, who had been. So Kiefer ends up winning this next HOH, beating Austin in that tiebreaker. This is a key HOH for you because, Austin would not have been the best HOH, at this point in the game. But Kiefer takes it, and that is going to be huge because Kiefer wants, to take that shot at Kyle and Ro, who have been, doing their utmost to try and get, the target on you and Jed. But you at this time, you had talked about, still, you know, potentially taking the shot at Vic or Austin. You did still feel like you had, some kind of relationship with Kyle and Ro. It's not until a little bit later in the week. When did you change your mind ultimately on Kyle and Ro?
When you say change your mind, do you mean like, what do you mean?
Well, at some point you had, so by the end of the week, Tara is going to be trying to flip the vote to keep Kyle against Austin. At the start of the week, you had kind of been pushing Austin to go over Kyle. Probably by the end of the week, you were like, nah, Kyle's got to go over Austin.
Well, the reality is like, I was a little bit indifferent into who went in that I knew both of them would put up Jed and I. The other reality was I had conversations with Kyle, as we alluded to before, about, you know, us, you know, having each other's backs and not putting each other up, which seemed to be a little bit more genuine than any conversation I had had with Austin. Mm. So I think my, I felt more comfortable with Kyle potentially winning an HOH next than I did with Austin. But as time went on, I knew Kyle was the glue that held together a lot of things, in my opinion. Kyle was really close with Tina and Tara. Kyle was really close with Austin and Brayden, in my mind. So it's like he held together this Austin, Brayden, Tina, Tara, Rohan group. And if Kyle was gone, I don't see how that group survives.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And the fact that Tara and Tina, or at least Tara, was pushing for Kyle to stay, reiterated that to me.
Yeah, that I was. Yeah, we had talked about that. I had actually wondered if Tara hadn't pushed so hard, because Kyle makes it, you know, on the final day, just to skip a little bit ahead here, on the final day of campaigning, Kyle makes a pitch to you and Jed, and then Austin makes a pitch, I think maybe just to Jed, I don't remember exactly, but Kyle's pitch was much better. As you guys discussed, but it seemed like one of the sticking points was, why would Tara want him in so bad? And I wondered, if Tara hadn't pushed so hard, could this have worked? Could Kyle have potentially stayed? I don't know, but I don't think it helped.
It didn't help. And that's what people don't realize. When certain people are campaigning for others, they're like, why are you campaigning? Mm-hmm. And that was one of those scenarios where it's like, you want Kyle this bad? No, he's got to go for sure.
Yeah.
Because he was the glue in my mind, and that confirmed it.
Yeah. The reason she wanted to flip the vote is because Kyle was saying, because they both were saying they'd go after you two, but she thought Kyle was more capable. This is, I think this is also, did you hosted this veto, right? The, This is the one that the Ro wins with the moles. Yeah. This is do you mind if I play some sound clips of
I don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill.
Original jokes.
you gave me some great sound clips. This is my favorite of Ro's, I think, after he wins this veto.
I want to give a shout out to my parents for creating this absolute champion.
I didn't even know he said that, but I love it.
It's great. Okay, so Ro wins this veto. Kiefer's gonna put Austin on the block. Now, this is the week where the relationship with Victoria is repaired. Kiefer, right from the get-go, is like, I'm not putting Victoria up. I think that we need to keep her safe this week. And Kyle and Ro, Austin and Brayden all make the mistake of trying to throw Victoria under the bus to Kiefer, which Kiefer is then able to say, hey, Victoria, guess who just threw you under the bus? And just like that, Victoria has drifted sort of back over to the Sunsetter side of things. And this is when you really start to work on that relationship.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we already had planted seeds in Victoria's head when she was HOH. I think we're really clear on the messaging was, remember who treats you different when you're no longer in power. And I think we kept reiterating that message to her. It's like, just focus on the people who have had strong relationships with you when you're HOH, and then focus on those people and the relationships that you have after your HOH. And I think it became clear to Victoria, once she was no longer HOH, the same people weren't friends with her in the same way. And Jed and I's relationship with Victoria was always consistent. And I think we want to establish that messaging that no matter what happens, we will always treat you the same. We'll love you the same. We'll care about you the same way, no matter if you're HOH or if you're not. And I think that message really resonated with her. And that was in the back of her head. And I think that contributed to the growth of our relationship. Not to mention Kyle, Austin, Brayden, and Rohan were pitching her to go up during Kiefer's HOH. Like, let's be real. These people who said you're your friends are trying to get you on the block. And we told you they wouldn't be your friends after you were HOH. So those two things came true. And that gave us an end to our relationship with Victoria. It's like, you can't trust these people. They turn their back on you when things get bad. And that's what they did. And that's what we pitched. And that's what happened.
So Kyle is then evicted, and that work with Victoria is really going to pay off because she wins the invisible HOH. And this is really, I think she would say so now as well. A huge missed opportunity for Victoria to take a shot at Austin and Brayden instead of, you or Jed or almost anybody else at this point. But she is going to go after Austin and Brayden. And you guys pretty quickly realize that Victoria is the HOH this week. And you just kind of need to, sort of nod your head and say, yes, that invisible HOH, whoever it is doing a great job.
Yes. I mean, to me, it became very obvious that it was Victoria pretty early. Especially when we saw the nominations for have-nots. But yeah, like we said, that relationship we established going into that week helped us in not being put on the block. Like, let's be real. After I didn't win that invisible HOH, I mentally prepared myself to go home. I was like, you know what? If I was anybody else, I'd put us up. But she didn't. Because we planted the correct seeds. But I still think she should have put us up. Mm-hmm. I do think it was a huge mistake on her part for her game. But I mean, that's what you get for establishing the right relationship at the right time. And that's what we did. And because we did that, we avoided going on the block, which I thought was a miracle.
Yeah. at this point in the game, there's, you had an interesting relationship with Tara, through most of the game. It seemed like this was the week where it really reached the pinnacle of, like, I am very annoyed right now. You mentioned, like, I'm not a sensitive person, but, like, she is getting to me. Can you just explain, like what was it like? Like, what was your relationship with Tara like to this point in the game?
At that point in the game, my relationship with Tara was very, I want to say, like, we had really deep and good conversations. But in terms of game, she was very hesitant to work with me. And she alluded to the fact that she didn't want to work with people I was working with. And she always wanted to wait to see what happened next week in order for her to work with me. So our game relationship was very surface level. Our personal relationship was pretty good. But she wasn't someone that, she was someone I was always wanting to work with, but was very hesitant to work with me. But I knew that we always had potential.
Mm-hmm. At this point in the game as well, while it seemed like initially you were the one who was, you know, closer to Beth. I mean, we've got to talk about the triangle at some point here. You know, it seemed like initially it was you and Beth, with Jed as sort of like a third triangle angle, I guess. And then, you know, in week 3-4, it kind of shifted and it became Jed and Beth. And you were maybe the third angle in the triangle. And then eventually it just became Jed and Beth. But if you're comfortable at all, can you tell me about that shift? Like, what, when did it happen? And do you know why?
The shift. So the reality was, I think the way the game started is that, Beth did have a crush on me and I did have a crush on her. I think I was clear about the fact that I did not want to show Matt. I didn't think that would be good for my game. And I think I was very clear about that throughout my game, the start, my game. I told myself that I did not want to show Mats because show Mats don't work out. But Jed and Beth seemed like they were actually interested in having a show Mats if it presented itself. And as I became friends with both of them, it became very clear to me that they were actually genuinely interested in each other and they were a better fit for each other. The situation with Beth and I was more like, it was physical, it was flirting, it was different than Jed and Beth. Like, it seemed deeper to me. Like, it seemed like, oh, they actually, like, want to have a thing together. In realizing this, I was like, great, this is perfect. You guys want to have a showmance? I'm friends with both of you. Why don't I just chill over here while you guys have your showmance? And we can just work together. I mean, you can call it like a love triangle. Like, I like Beth, you like Beth. The love triangle. But the reality was, it was like, I knew Jed liked her. I knew they would end up in a show match. And I was ecstatic about it. Because show matches are targets. And I knew that they would always be bigger targets than I would be. And that was good for my game.
Yeah, and you start having conversations with Kiefer. Now, you talked to Jed first, I believe, and you said, like, hey, I think it's a good idea for us to try to, you know, separate ourselves a little bit. And then you'd have conversations with Kiefer about, like, you know, I know I'm the third wheel here. But it seemed like you were keeping Jed informed of these conversations at this time. Were you trying to just, you know, separate yourself perception wise, with Kiefer, or were these like actual, you felt this way at this time, conversations, this is during the Victoria Invisible HOH week?
I think like at that time, like, I know perception is everything. And I didn't want the house to see Jed and Ty were names that were said together all the time. And I needed that to change. And I didn't want Jed and Ty to be tied together. I wanted to be Jed and Beth. And my goal at that point was to still be working with them, but to have the narrative switch from Jed and Ty to Jed and Beth. Because if you're going to put up somebody, you're going to put up Jed and Beth. You're going to put up Jed and Ty because they're boys, but Jed and Beth, they're the duo. And I think that was my goal in trying to distance myself. So I was trying to never be seen with Jed. Jed would be working out. He was working out by himself. Jed doing the only thing we do together is cook together in the morning. The reality is I didn't want anybody to see us together, so they couldn't establish that we're a relationship. The only thing that you could try to say is we kind of have similar physique and build, and our skin color is similar. Like, that's the only thing you could group together. But I didn't want you to be able to say they're a thing. I wanted it to be Jed and Beth, and I think that was my goal.
Yeah. Now that Kyle is gone, Ro is also going to start to hang out with you guys more often and try to get in with you guys. It seemed like initially you were somewhat open to this. You know, obviously Austin and Braden were on the block at this point. Vic was still, after this week would still be a big target. You still had, you know, people like Tina and Tara to deal with. Now Ro is going to make, what I consider to be a big mistake, later in this week, but prior to that, do you think there was a chance that Ro could have gotten in with you guys at least a little bit and not been the main target?
No, I don't think there's any chance Ro could have worked with us. Not us. I think Ro could have worked with maybe, I think Beth was trying to work with him, and try to pretend to us like it wasn't real. But the reality is like, there's no way Ro was working with all of us. Ro was going to work with, you know, one of us or two of us, but not all of us. Impossible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, ultimately what we see him do is, you know, in working with Beth, he tries to sort of flip her against you guys, and tell her that like that she's expendable to you guys and so on and so forth. She runs that back to you guys. And at that point it seems like, okay, any chance we weren't going to target Ro, is done. He's got to go.
Yeah. Ro was done in my mind for a long time. He needed to go. I didn't sleep well with him being in the house. And once he was gone, I slept better. There's nothing anybody could have said to convince me that he wasn't targeting Jed and myself at that point.
You also had a funny conversation, or a couple of funny conversations with Austin and Braden this week, where they were convinced that you were the invisible HOH. How did you handle that?
Honestly, I don't think I handled it the best. I think the thing about me is my demeanor doesn't really change no matter what the situation is. So it's like, I wasn't the invisible HOH, but I was acting completely the same. And I think that concerned people because I didn't come off as being worried about who that invisible HOH was. I was just kind of like, hey, I hope it's not. I hope someone's not putting me up. But the reality was, I wasn't super concerned. I was just like, well, I can go home at any time and it is what it is. And I'm just going to continue living my life. And I think that came off as suspicious to some people.
Well, this is something we talked about because it did seem like for a while there in the first half of the game, when people did talk about targeting Jed and Ty, it actually was often Ty more than Jed. At first, now things did change, as you said, when it became Jed and Beth, Jed became the bigger threat. But at first it seemed like you were the bigger target. And, you know, we were kind of speculating as to why, because it seemed like even early on, we kind of felt like it seems like Ty is sort of maybe a little bit better at the game. But maybe people are recognizing that, like, we're not sure what's going on. You do seem like a little bit more reserved, a little bit more like introspective, at times. And I think that you're harder to read. And I think that at first that was one of the reasons why you were being targeted over Jed, who's a little bit easier to read. He sort of wears his emotions on his sleeve a little bit more. And I think that we talked about it in this week as invisible HOH. You know, when you see somebody that you can't really read, you start to get a little suspicious sometimes. They're like, oh, maybe I can't. It's got to be him. But I don't know. Do you feel any way about that?
I think that's entirely accurate. Like, I don't think why I think I'm so difficult to read is kind of what I said, is that I don't really change when the situation changes. I'm still the same. You can't really understand where my head's at because I don't act different towards people when they become HOH. I don't treat them different when they're on the block. I don't treat them different when I'm HOH. Like, no matter what the situation was in the game, no matter how chaotic the house was, I think I was, my behavior and my demeanor was just very consistent. And when you're like that and difficult to read, I think people, they're scared of you at some points in this game. Yeah. But then there's also points where in the game, people are scared of you because they know where your head's at and know where you stand. And I think when it came to Beth and Jed, as their relationship became deeper and stronger, people knew that they would ride for each other no matter what. Mm-hmm. And it comes a point in the game where duos are a threat. And if you want to get rid of duos, and the fact that I wasn't in one made me less of a target than Jed because he was actually in one. So he became easier to read, and in that made him more of a threat.
Yeah. And I know that like a lot of people watching, a lot of, you know, people that are fans of you really appreciate the sort of like stoicism and like level headed. I know that I do. It's something that like I personally related to a lot. And it was very fun to watch you as somebody that was very successful in the game, also be able to be like a slightly more reserved person. It was definitely a lot of fun to watch. Now there is one more thing that happens this week. And this is when you and Brayden start to get a little bit closer. He the first time we heard of it on the feeds, he was talking to Austin, and they were trying to figure out exactly what happened. Give me a percentage. And we were trying to figure out what is the percentage and what does the percentage mean? What exactly, like where did this come from and what exactly was this relationship at this point?
With Brayden and myself?
Mm-hmm.
During the Invisible HOH?
Yeah, it was toward the end of the week.
I don't think our relationship was that strong at that point. Like, I knew that he would be important going forward. I don't think I realized his importance at that point. But I did know that Austin was obviously somebody that I didn't trust. And she said things to confirm that week that I could not trust her. For example, I think, I don't know if it was that week, but we did have a conversation about whether or not she wanted me to go up as a replacement nominee during Victoria's HOH. And she said that she had nothing to do with that. And I said, well, I heard that she did. And she's like, well, I heard lots of things about you, but that, she said she heard a lot of things that I said about her, but she said that she didn't bring them up to me because she just trusts that they wouldn't be true. And that was a huge red flag to me because I'm like, hold on a second. You trust me? I'm like, why on earth would you trust me? I have not done anything to establish your trust. So the fact that you were hearing that I said things about you and you didn't come to me about them is a red flag because we don't have trust. We're not close. So that's originally when I realized Austin does not trust me, and she's telling me that she does, which is a lie. So that means if she was the Invisible HOH, I'd be going up on the block. Or if she was any HOH, I'd be going up on the block, and that therefore she needs to go. Brayden didn't give me the same kind of vibe, but I knew that if Brayden was to ever be HOH while Austin was in the house, he'd put me up because of her. And I needed to really establish a relationship with Brayden where he needed to know that he was never a target of mine. I had no issue with him. But I didn't know how deep our relationship would go at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, Austin is going to be evicted there, and Beth wins the next HOH. Another huge, huge result for you guys, especially for you, because this was a particularly good result for you, because not only are you safe with a Beth HOH win, but it came down to Beth and Jed in the final two tiebreaker for this competition, which only further solidifies their status as a power couple in the game. And that's obviously a great thing, perception wise, for you. Now, Beth, this is when Beth starts to talk to the cameras about like, how she's not necessarily super loyal to the cause here, and that she would love to keep Roe in the game this week because she wants him to take a shot at you. She wanted you gone. That's what she told the cameras. Now she's gonna, you know, she's gonna,
me?
Yeah. She's Beth. So, you know, she's gonna change her mind on this a few times. But she does want to keep Ro if she can. This is when Tina and Tara go to Jed and let him know that Victoria has been trying to get them to put Beth on the block, and things kind of shift over to Victoria. And there's a lot this week had so much discussion back and forth on whether the shot should be taken on Victoria. Now, right before the veto, you did offer to Beth that you would throw the veto, and she said, nah, it's, I don't want you to do that. Would you have actually thrown it if she had said yes?
No, I didn't want to ever come out that I threw the veto and it cost Victoria. Mm-hmm. I always want to be able to say that I tried, and I knew that there was a potential that I may not win. And if Victoria Hart found out I threw it, or it looked like I threw it, I don't think that would reflect well on my game. Mm-hmm. In any circumstance, whether she was in the jury, whether she didn't end up going home, like I just didn't want it to ever come out that I threw it and then Victoria finds out. Yeah. And I'm a little scared of Victoria, as you can imagine.
Now, obviously, it seemed like this is the side that you were on, and that it was you versus Beth with Jed kind of flipping back and forth, whether or not you should backdoor Victoria. If you had won the veto, I imagine you would not have used it. Roe would have gone home that week. Yeah.
Facts. Yeah. Roe would have 100% went home.
But
there was no way I was choosing Victoria to go home over Roe. That, right. That wouldn't have made sense.
Yeah. It didn't make any sense. But Roe does end up winning that veto, and that means that Victoria, is going to go up on the block. Now the move goes through pretty painlessly, but once she's on the block, there's again a lot of discussion back and forth about whether you should actually send her home. How close were you to keeping Victoria in the game? I guess when were you the closest, and how close were you?
I would say that I wasn't as close as you'd think. There seems to have been situations where you think I was closer than I was in the way in which I spoke, but I think I was very aware of game versus emotions. The reality was I knew Victoria had to go home at some point, whether it was that week or on the double. I had planned for her to go home on the double, mm-hmm. but the fact that Rohan was safe and this double still hadn't come, and Victoria was on the block now, meant that Victoria had to go home at that point. I know we were debating back and forth whether or not she should stay or go home, but the reality was I knew game-wise that was the right choice to make. Mm-hmm.
Victoria's going to, in her final pitch to you guys, let you know, hey, Brayden, you may think he's working with you, but he's working with Roe. Was this news to you at the time? Cause if, you know, you guys reacted like, wait, what are we doing with Brayden? And what was your sort of response to, what was the game plan with Brayden from that point?
I did have my concerns about Brayden working with Roe, because I think at that point we learned about the oddball, and it seemed very hard for me to believe that an alliance just ends after a week. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, the oddballs just died after 36 hours. I don't believe that 72 hours alliance doesn't sit well. But Brayden and Roe did not appear to be working together. That's something what struggled with me the most. Like, I struggled with that. I'm like, I really haven't seen them together. But also, I understood that Roe was not a man of many words when he was working with people.
Yeah.
Like, he was very quick. Like, he was in and out. Even my conversations with him are very quick. So I was like, I really didn't know. I actually was like, I don't know if he's working with him, but it just doesn't make sense to me that they would all just stop working together. I don't believe people just stop working together. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sold. But I didn't know that had Rohan not been around, Brayden would be completely naked and alone in the game. This I did know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as you pointed out here, after Vic is evicted, it's not really going to matter, because Kiefer wins that double eviction HOH, puts up Roe and Brayden. You win your first competition here, the sword maze, and you said something along the lines of what did you say? Your celebration. Awesome.
I might have said urban planner for what? Yes. All these muscles for what?
Where did that come from? What's the meaning behind that celebration?
You know what? Because I failed to be able to build that that puzzle in BB Can Condos.
Mm.
I think the general consensus that was that because I'm an urban planner, I should be able to build a condo. And I'm like, or a 3D puzzle. I'm like, they're unrelated. Yeah. Like, there's no relationship between being an urban planner and building a 3D puzzle. Like, I just don't get this relationship. So I think that was just like, doesn't matter what I do.
Yeah.
I won the maze, whatever. It was, I'm able to do it.
It was definitely funny to hear after a sword maze competition.
I know. It didn't make sense in time. That's my explanation. Like, you know what? Urban planners know directions and cities, and the maze is about analyzing a route, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's. I mean, when you're planning, you use a sword to sort of map out where you're going, right? That's the custom. So Ro gets evicted here. Unanimously, and Ro. So I talked to Ro in my exit interview. I talked to both Ro and Victoria. They both listed to me their jury preferences. Ro told me that he was more likely to vote for Brayden than you. Not specifically you, but he put Brayden second after Kiefer. Victoria said same. Essentially, same list, except she flipped Beth and Jed. She would vote for Jed ahead of Beth, and Ro had said Beth ahead of, or Jed ahead of, or either way. So at the time, that's what they were thinking, or at least it's what Ro was thinking, and Victoria like echoed those sentiments, which is, you know, just information that doesn't end up mattering because they vote for you anyway. But it's interesting because, you know, when we talk about the jury vote, like, when did this potentially change and why, I think is an interesting conversation. So week 7, Jed wins the HOH. It's not really week 7. It's just how I count weeks. But Jed wins the next HOH. And Tara admits to you guys that, that she would have put you up if she had won, which I imagine was like, well, okay, so should we take you out then?
Hold on, Tara said she'd put me up if she won?
Yeah, she had a conversation with you. She was like, oh yeah, I would have put you and Jed up, like, of course.
Oh yeah, something Tara would obviously say. Yeah. That sounds very Tara-like.
And Kiefer is also going to admit to you guys that he knew that Victoria was the invisible HOH all along and never told you.
Didn't love that statement from Kiefer, not gonna lie to you. When Kiefer said that, I was like, well, that would have been great information to volunteer 24 hours ago. You know what? The reality was we're having very deep conversations between, you know, keeping Tara or keeping Victoria, and he came to us telling us after the fact that Victoria wanted to put up Jed and myself during the Invisible HOH. And that would have been information that would have been very useful when we had needed it. And the fact that he told us after was like, okay, so you held on to that. Didn't tell us the information in a timely manner. We can't trust you. Mm-hmm. We thought we could. We thought you were loyal. But it's clear to me, or at least us, that we can't trust you as much as we thought we could.
Yeah.
And I think that played into a factor, if we fast forward a little bit, into Kiefer ended up going up on the block, partially because of that.
Yeah, well, so initially it's Tina and Tara, and it seems like Tara is the target. I mean, she's telling you that she would have put you up. But then things quickly kind of changed to, no, Brayden's going to be the backdoor target. There was a lot of talk about, like, especially now that you sort of were told that Brayden had been working with Ro. He hangs out with you guys a lot, and he's probably the next biggest threat. So the target kind of shifts to Brayden. Now, at this point, it seemed like you were on board with this. You didn't have a strong enough relationship with Brayden to feel any kind of way about that yet.
So yes and no. Like, obviously my relationship with Brayden wasn't super strong at that point, but I couldn't really actively have a hand in him going up on the block as a replacement nominee. It was between Tara and Tina. Obviously Tara was the target, because we know Tara's putting us up if she wins HOH. We know this. But if Tara was to come down, which she ended up coming down, my assumption would have been it would have been Brayden, but I wasn't going to vocally advocate for Brayden going up, because from what I remember from that week, we were trying to establish the order in which we wanted to get everybody out. That's how cocky we were.
Yep.
It's ridiculous, actually. But we were like, okay, so who do we need out this week? Okay, Tara, then what? Then is it Braden or is it Tina? Okay, let's get out Braden next and let's get out Tina. Like, that's how we were talking that week. Mm-hmm. And then when Tara pulled herself off the block, we're like, oh, shoot. Well, things aren't going according to the plan. So then who are we putting up next? And Beth and I had a conversation about how Kiefer worried us in terms of knowing his days. And I don't know if that sparked Jed's interest in putting up Kiefer. I don't know if I'm jumping ahead of here, but yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, it was tough because from our perspective, the feeds went down for the veto and the plan in place was Braden backdoor. And Braden was like the only person not picked for the veto. So it was like, Braden's done. Like, there's almost no chance that Braden stays if he's the plan for the backdoor. Feeds come back. Tara has won the veto. And it's you three discussing Kiefer's going. And it was like, whoa, that changed fast. So I think we definitely missed something. And we saw a little bit of it in the episode. And you gave me perhaps my favorite sound clip of the entire season. When Jed says to you that you could put up Kiefer, or he could put up Kiefer, and you say,
oh, we could, couldn't we?
I said, oh, we could, couldn't we?
Yep.
I said that, I don't even know I said that.
Oh, man. I just, the way you said it, it's beautiful. I loved it. I played this sound clip so many times.
Oh, we could, couldn't we?
Oh, my gosh. I sounded like I was excited about it. That's crazy.
I mean, Ty, could we talk about your game?
Oh, we could, couldn't we?
There we go. Yeah.
I love it. Oh my gosh.
Oh man. It was, I like it, but yeah. So tell me about that because, you know, later you tell Kiefer that you were not pleased with the idea, but obviously you're going to tell Kiefer that. So what exactly was the response from you?
So let's unpack that for a second. The reality was in this game, I had learned that being resistant doesn't get you anywhere. From Latoya's week, when you're trying to push something to happen, or people want to do what they're doing and they want to do it. That's the reality. Jed wanted to put up Kiefer. I was like, I was shocked because I was like, now? At the same time, I was like, hey, that's what you want to do? I'm down. Because there weren't any other options for me. It's either Kiefer or Braden. I don't think either of them would have went home. But I wasn't going to be an advocate for putting Braden on the block because it would come out that I was an advocate for Braden. So I was just like, if that's what Jed wants to do, I'm his number one supporter because it's his HOH. I was very big on the HOH having full reign on their own HOH, and I would support whatever they did. And that's what Jed wanted to do. I was going to support it.
There you go. So this is also the week, speaking about your relationship with Braden, there's definitely, you know, a lot of discussion about like how involved was the relationship with Braden, and like, you know, how much of it was game, how much of it was personal. Is that something that you want to comment on?
On my relationship with Braden, in terms of how much it was game and how much it was personal?
Yeah, because, you know, you have a conversation with Beth and you know, I'm sure you've heard about it at this point. But yeah, like, you know, how much of it was sort of intentional? Like, I'm going to sort of like get in and play this guy. And how much of it was like just genuine, you know, like, I could take a cuddle here and there.
Oh, I mean, I love the cuddle. The relationship with Braden was obviously like game was my priority there. Like I wasn't there to have personal relationships if we're being real. And I understood that Braden did have a crush on me. And I knew that using that would accelerate the growth of our relationship. But the reality was I actually liked Braden as a person. Like I was like, he's funny. He's fun to be around. He shares a lot of the similar viewpoints that I have of the world. Like we have great conversation. Like I actually did have a lot of love for Braden. The reality was like my priority was game. It always was. And I established that relationship to further my game. But did I care about him? Yes. Did I Did I have a strong personal relationship with him? Yes. Did I have a great connection with Brady? Yeah. Like, he's probably one of the best friends I had in the house and coming out of the house. That's the reality. But yeah, it was really a great game move, in my opinion, mm-hmm. to have a strong relationship with him, because I don't think I get where I got without him, nor do I think he gets where he got either.
Yeah. Well, you guys let Kiefer know that he's going to be going up and essentially going home. And this is a huge emotional moment, both on the feeds and in the episode. You all end up just bawling. You cried to Tina as well. The emotional toll that the game took on you and on everyone. Is that something that you anticipated before playing?
No, I didn't. The reality is, I think in my personal life that I'm pretty like ruthless. So me crying about people I met 30 days ago, I'd be like, let's be real. Like, I don't care. I'm there to win money. Mm-hmm. But it actually did take an emotional toll on me, because the reality is you're spending 24 hours, 7 days a week with these people. It's not just, you know, 8 hours a day or 3 hours a day. These were like real deep relationships. And seeing these people every day and then seeing them go home, and the way in which they would go home sometimes, it was hard to swallow. Like, Kiefer was my guy. Like, I had so much love for Kiefer. You know what I mean? Like, he was relatable to me. So to see us cut him before we even needed to, really kind of broke my heart. But it was a decision that Jed wanted to make, and I was like, I stand by you, bro. But it was hard.
Yeah. Now at this point in the game, Beth tells the cameras she has changed her mind. She does want to go to the final three with both you and Jed. That's the plan at this point. Status update. Kiefer is then going to pitch to Jed that it's best for Jed's game to keep him in the game. He says to Jed, you know, if you think about it, the real big move is to put me up and then keep me. And Jed was like, sure. And then he talks with you, and this seems like the first real big conversation that where you really mean it, where it's like, okay, I know I'm not going far with these two. I know they're picking each other over me. I maybe need to look elsewhere. Is that sort of the correct read?
No. So I think the more correct read would be, like, if we rewind for a second, mm-hmm. when Jed had initially told me he wanted to put Kiefer up, I think that's when I realized, oh, he's putting up Kiefer.
So that sort of primed you.
Yes.
Okay.
Because I remember seeing a look in his eye, and I didn't recognize that. Because Jed was always the straight shooter, loyal, no matter what, has our back. And there was a look in his eye that I saw at that time, and I'm like, I don't know who this guy is. I remember thinking that to myself. I agreed with him, but I was still like, who is this? Who wants to put up Kiefer? All we've been talking about is loyalty to the soil and the Sunsetters to the four, and they'll play. And then you want to put up Kiefer at seven. And I'm just like, okay, I don't recognize this, Jay, and that worries me. And that's when I realized, okay, this can't be my plan A anymore. It's done. If he's putting up Kiefer, I'm next. And there was nothing they could tell me that would make me think any different.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that I was curious about is that you did still talk to Beth and Jed and try. It seemed like you were trying to warn them, like, hey, Kiefer's not that loyal. I don't know if you can trust Kiefer, guys. So was that like, where did that come? Was that sort of like potential damage control in case Kiefer ratted you out? Like, where were you on that?
I think part of me was just being real. Mm-hmm. And then I think part of me was just putting feelers out there to see what they thought. Because I was just very surprised that you guys put this guy on the block.
Yeah.
Or we put this guy on the block and we think he's going to be 100% loyal to us going forward in this game. I just found it hard to believe, and I just want to see where they stood on that one. And they seemed convinced that no matter what, even though we did Kiefer this dirty, he would still have our backs. And I'm like, that makes no sense. And I think in my head, I'm just like, I don't get you guys. You guys think you can just do whatever you want to people and they'll be loyal to you no matter what. I think that was just surprising to me. I just felt like we should have more, our back should be more up about this guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Kiefer ends up staying. This was the announcer had some great moments. This was definitely one of them. This is what the announcer says in the episode after Kiefer stays.
The mullet man stepped out of the grave.
the mullet man. Yeah.
Accurate.
And he also had a...
Just call me the Grim Kiefer because I am ripping these duos apart.
That's when he took out Kyle. All right. So Tina's evicted here. Tina tells me that she gives me a list of the people she's most likely to vote for to who she's least likely to vote for. She has Kiefer first. Everybody has Kiefer first. Every single person that was evicted. She has you... in Brayden, actually last, but she has Ty or you just above Brayden, on the list. So you have your first official, vote over Brayden, according to the exit interviews, which, didn't turn out to be true. we head into the next week. Tara wins this HOH, and, this is really like the first time that it's like, okay, somebody outside of your sphere of influence is one power now. It's definitely a precarious situation because her initial plan is you and Jed on the block. But luckily Beth has other plans. Now this was the most confusing move for me because from Beth's perspective, like this was great. You and Jed on the block. That's fine for her. She keeps saying that she kind of wants this, but maybe doesn't. But she comes up with this plan to try and save the both of you, even though she kind of was talking about maybe wanting one of you gone. And the plan is to try and convince Tara to put up, Kiefer or Brayden. Tara says no to Kiefer. So, okay, maybe Ty and Brayden. As long as we get Brayden on the block, we can take Brayden out. She pitches it to you and you are like,
why don't you go on the block, Beth?
I mean, obviously not pleased.
So listen, Beth that week seemed too comfortable with me being on the block.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wasn't feeling it. And it was like, I don't like your demeanor when you talk about me going up. Seems to be like, oh, Ty, don't worry. You're going up. It'll be fine. And I was like, no, you go up. It'll be fine. I don't want to go on the block. People go on the block and they go home.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to be there. I had no plans to be there all season and it wasn't going to start then. The reality was she told Brayden that, I would go home if I was on the block next to him. And she told me that Brayden would go home and if I was on the block. And I didn't want either of us to go home. So I was just like, first of all, like that doesn't make any sense to me. And then second, she wanted me to pitch to Tara that me, her, and Jed were no longer seeing eye to eye and that we weren't a thing to try to ensure that only one of us go up. I just don't think she anticipated that she would be one of those people. And it turns out that she became one of those people. In the conversation with Tara, Kiefer and Brayden did a really good job in ensuring that I don't go up.
Mm-hmm.
And I also had a hand in that.
Yeah,
so
I mean...
It was like...
Go ahead.
Most of the house didn't want me on the block. That's the reality. And it didn't play out that way. And Beth was very unhappy with me because of that.
Yeah. I mean, Tara had no intention of putting Beth on the block that week.
She didn't.
She thought she was working closely with Beth. So when Beth tries to pull a fast one on her for no reason, Kiefer rats her out, exposes all kinds of info on Beth, all kinds of things that she's been saying, which ring true to Tara because she has been saying those things to Tara. And Tara's so annoyed. She's like, well, I guess Beth is more likely to use the veto on Jed than Ty is at this point. And Beth is the real danger. I got to put Beth on the block next to Jed instead of Ty. And of course that ends up changing a lot. I mean, I really feel like if Beth does not try to go through with that plan, the whole Endgame changes, because that was, she was never supposed to touch the block that week. But she does. And it's, you do end up avoiding the block here. I think another, I would imagine, key thing here for you, you know, whether or not you would have been safe, the fact that you did not touch the block this week, had to have weighed on the jury, at least to some degree, right? Because you never end up touching the block. And we'll talk more about the jury in just a bit, but, I guess, yeah, we'll postpone that until we talk about the jury, but, either way, big for you that you don't touch the block here. You spend a lot of time trying to make sure that, Tara believes that you won't use the veto. You're also telling, Jed that you will use the veto at this point. This is when things start to get a little backstabby.
Yeah, they got a little sticky here. The reality was, is I think I may have undersold that to the jury about how impressive it was that I didn't end up on the block this week as an initial nominee or a replacement nominee. I think that's even more impressive. Mm-hmm. That she put up somebody from the oddballs rather than me as a replacement. I think that's even more impressive.
Yeah, believe me, I was astounded.
Yeah, because in reality, I would have put myself up next to Jed, and she said, you know what? One of them will go home no matter what. But it seemed like she really wanted Jed and not me to go, which was really strong for my game. Yeah, again, I think Kiefer and Brayden did a really good job in ensuring that I didn't go up. I think Beth, doing too much as she always does, did too much and said too much. And her story just stopped adding up. She was saying too many things to too many people. And people, when the game changes, you have to change. And you can't be telling everybody different things or the same things, because it got to the point where we're all just talking to each other. And Tara got wind of Beth saying certain things, and Beth was saying verbatim things that she was saying to Kiefer or to Brayden, and they're getting back to Tara. So Tara was like, well, can't trust Beth. And the reality was, I think I did a good job in convincing Tara that Beth is more likely to use a veto on Jed than I would be. Mm-hmm. Because I had already planted the seed that if I'm going to go far in this game, it's not going to be with Beth and Jeff. They are in love. It was clear that they were in love. Like, I didn't even really need to sell that. I'm like, they're talking about vacationing together, who's moving where. Like, they were clearly in love. So it's like, I'm like, Tara, you really think I'm going to use a veto on these people? Like, we want to split up a duo. And it's like, I'm not in a duo. I need you to know that. The closest duo I have is Brayden. And you're not putting up Brayden and me, so put up one of them. Don't put me up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, just don't put me up. End of story. I think that was my thing.
Yes. Well, things get complicated when Jed wins the veto, and Kiefer ends up coming up with the idea. What if we convince Jed to use it on Beth? And initially it seems like, well, why would that ever work? But this is Jed, and he came into the game wanting to make a move like that, he says. So it ends up working. Now you get on board with this idea. Now before Jed had won this veto, between Jed and Beth, it seemed like you had, I think you were leaning toward evicting Beth, right, over Jed, or am I remembering wrong?
No, you're actually right. I mean, emotionally, I was like, they got to be split up, and Jed's my guy, so if we're going to get rid of one of them, let's just get rid of Beth. And had I won the veto, I think we would have had a further conversation. One thing to learn about me is, like, I really like having decisions in my hand so I can go back and forth and really talk them through. Mm-hmm. And this is what I always, that was my strategy. I want to have the decision in my hand as long as possible. And having that veto would have given me a decision to make and a conversation to have. I didn't end up winning it, but yeah, you're right. Like, I did at that point was really emotionally tied to getting Beth out of the game. At that point, she's just irritating me. And I'm just like, get her out. But would Jed have been better for my game to get out? Probably. So I don't know what I would have done, but I know I was vocal about, I just want Beth gone. Like, she's irritating me right now.
You see, I mean, at the time, I actually felt like that was probably the right call, just because Jed would remain a bigger target in the game to sort of mask you. Obviously, you know, either way, it ends up working. And there's always the pros and cons list at that point in the game. It's like, yes, you can leave in a bigger target, but that makes it less likely that you're going to win competitions because they're more likely to win competitions. So there's definitely arguments on both sides, I think. But the plan has to come into play here for Jed to use the veto on Beth. And this is, this is definitely one of the most, I think a lot of people agreed, one of the more brutal backstabs in the history of the show, in a good way. But you are there, you and Beth and Kiefer, and Beth, of course, doesn't know it at the time, but you and Kiefer are there, like, pumping Jed up, like, yeah, man, use the veto on it. This is going to be epic. This is going to be great. All the while kind of knowing, you poor man. Like, this is not going to turn out well.
Not at all.
Yeah.
You know what? Like, that was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do, maybe in my life. But the reality was, again, as much as I made it seem like I may have been sold or not sold on a decision, I knew the right game move would have been to take out Jed, but I wanted to be in a position to make a decision. Mm-hmm. The reality was, we pulled down Jed, getting Jed to use the veto on Beth gave us a chance to really look at the situation objectively for 3 days and be like, okay, is Jed best for my game or is he not? And in taking the time to decide that, it really came out that he really wasn't. Mm-hmm. But it was really hard to do, but I knew that I just wanted to be in a position to make a decision, and getting him to use that veto gave me the ultimate decision. As much as we want to say Tara was the HOH, she was, but I think the decision came down to me. If I wanted Jed to stay, he would have stayed. I wanted Jed to leave, he would have left, and he needed to go, in my opinion.
So you would say your mind wasn't completely made up at the time that the veto was used and that Braden went up?
When you say completely made up, I would say my mind was leaning toward him going, because I wanted to get him to use the veto so he's on the block so we could vote him out. But I was open to keeping him. I was open to it. But I don't know what it would have taken for me to flip, but I was still like, I'm not 100% certain, but this is probably what I'm going to do.
Well, that was definitely one of the bigger questions, I think, that at least I had. I think maybe some others did as well. But like, you essentially make the decision to not really let Jed know what the decision is until close to, you know, eviction time, essentially. And there's not a whole lot of sort of like just, I would say, blunt explanation. It's a lot of sort of like, the way that you end up telling him it was a little bit roundabout, in terms of you don't really admit to this being the plan all along. And that, that it was an option all along. And it sounds like perhaps one of the reasons why this is because you actually were open to changing your mind and didn't want to close that door.
And that's exactly it. Like, I didn't want to make it seem like we've been stringing him along the whole time, or I've been stringing him along the whole time. The reality is, I want to make it seem as if I was really pondering and it was a tough decision. The reality was, I was leaning one way the whole time, as I said to you. I didn't want Jed to know that. I wanted Jed to think that I was really struggling with this. And then in the end, I realized, shit, he has to go home. Did I know Beth was in the background telling him the truth the whole time? Yeah. No. But that irritated me because I was like, why? You're the one that came to me. Even though this was the plan, like, I also think this plan was a test for Beth to see when she would come out and want to turn on Jed. And it turns out she wanted to turn on him within 3 hours of us, of him pulling her off the block. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we want to get a gauge for. How ruthless is Beth? And we learned that she's as ruthless as we thought.
Yeah, maybe even more. My read on Beth was that, and I think this is the reason she made the pitch to Tara in the beginning of the week as well, is that if something were to happen, she wanted it to be her move. So like, even though Tara putting you and Jet on the block would have been great for her game, she wanted it to be her HOH. She said so to the camera, like, this is going to be my HOH. And I think when it was like, oh, well, Jed might be leaving, when that becomes an option, she was like, well, that's my move. I'm doing it. And so that was my read, at least in terms of like where that came from, because it was definitely odd the way that she kept going back and forth between, we need to take Jed out. Jed, I think they're going to try and take you. I think you need to campaign. It definitely was an interesting bit there. But ultimately Jed goes home here, and on his way out the door, ultimately we see what happens there. He ends up facing off against Tara. But when he talks to me, he tells me that you are over Brayden on his list. You and Tara were tied, he said.
Mm-hmm. It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So you win the fake double eviction, HOH. You put up Tara and Beth. Brayden wins the veto. He doesn't use it. Kiefer and Brayden said they did not want Tara to go, but you did. And so they ultimately sent Tara out this week. I remember you had a conversation with Kiefer the week before. In the week before, where Kiefer mentioned that he actually thought that Tara was a bigger threat than Beth in competitions. And you were like, oh, I hadn't thought of that. But I think you're right. Was that the moment that you decided Tara is the one you would want to go over Beth, or was there something else?
That may have been the moment. The reality was like, Tara had proved to me that she has this ability when her back's against the wall to win. And that kind of scared me, if I'm being real. And I was kind of right about that sentiment, because she, when I evicted her on the fake double, she proved me right again. Mm-hmm. So as a competitor, Tara scared me more than Beth did. That was just the reality. I knew Beth knew her days, but I was a little bit more worried of Tara. I just was. There was something that told me that at that time she needed to go. And I'm glad it was her, because if Beth had gone against Jed in that fake double, I think Beth would have let Jed just come back, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And we would have been in a lot more problems.
Yeah. Well, Brayden wins the next HOH, puts up Beth and Tara after Tara comes back. He also wins the veto. Now, this is Brayden's third competition in a row. Now, you had just won your second, but Brayden just won three in a row. Are you starting to get at least a little bit concerned that, like, if Brayden starts winning a bunch of these in a row, could he get the momentum he needs to overtake me in jury votes?
Yeah, if I'm being real, I was worried about Brayden potentially overtaking me because of his comp wins. Because at that time, he had more total comp wins than I did. The only issue with Brayden is he didn't have moves.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have any big moves. Like, there was nothing he did that was significant, in my opinion. He won a veto, didn't use it. He won an HOH, got out Beth. But what?
We really felt he should have gone after Kiefer here.
He should have, 100%. I didn't want him to, because in reality, we had a final two. If he takes out Kiefer, I'm not bringing him anywhere. There's no way. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, he got out the best player in the game, in my opinion, and everybody's opinion. I knew everybody thought Kiefer was the best player. So whoever was to get Kiefer out would not be the first thing you want to be standing next to in Final Two. And if Braden would have tried to get Kiefer out, there's no way our Final Two would have been valid. It would have invalidated our Final Two.
Who do you think would have taken if Braden takes out Kiefer at four, and so that means, or sorry, at five, so that means the Final Four is you, Beth, Tara, and Braden. Who do you try to take to the Final Two at that point?
I mean, I think you know the answer to that. It would be Beth.
Yeah.
The jury doesn't like her. I would have for sure taken her, but I didn't want to take Beth. I didn't trust Beth. I didn't want to be in a situation where like I could potentially have to trust Beth in a Final Two. I'm just like, oh. So I would have taken her though, 100%. Had Braden take out Kiefer, I take Beth. But I wanted to take Braden. And we said that a lot for a long time. And I tried to make that as clear as to him as possible without saying it verbatim. But I was like, Kiefer is not the move right now.
Yes. Well, so, go ahead.
No, and I wanted Kiefer to potentially still be my move. That was the other thing. Mm-hmm. I wanted the chance to have Kiefer for myself. So if Braden took him out, it would take away that chance for me.
Yeah, Kiefer had so many conversations with you where he was just like, Ty, you're going to take me out. It's the best move for your game. It's like, Kiefer, what are you doing?
I mean, it was. He was right.
Like, yeah.
He was absolutely right. The problem with Kiefer in this game was he just talked a little too much. Like, he said too many, like, he said he's going to win. He said too many things that made people think he was a threat. And it was quite accurate.
Yeah. This is, you get into a few different fights with Beth, and it culminates into, this diary room segment.
All she does is throw people under the bus. Like, I'm done with her. Like, I don't even care about jury management at this point. Like, as long as she's gone, I am happy. I don't need her vote. I don't want it. I just want to get to the end and forget about Beth.
Which was interesting. So tell me about this, because I know we talked about it a little bit, and I actually do really like your sort of take on this, which is that, you know, jury management should be about how you play the game, not how much you kiss ass right before somebody leaves. But tell me about like how you're feeling in this moment, because, you know, there were only seven votes. So it was definitely a risky play. To take that sort of stance?
Definitely. The reality was, is like, I knew at the end I would have to win out to get to the end. I had conversations about Beth, and I'm like, if I want to win this game, I got to win every comp. Not every comp, but the next, all the HOHs, which I did. But I knew that to some degree, the jury wouldn't want to vote for the best player. I assume that at the end, if I won those comps, there would be no doubt that I was the best player. So did I, in my mind, did I need best vote? No, because the rest of them would vote for the best player. And that would be me. At that time, jury management, the way it was defined by other people, because remember, I wasn't a super fan of the show. I didn't see jury management as a thing where you kiss up to the jury before they leave. I'm just like, jury management should be how you played the game. How did you play it? I think for the most part, I didn't throw many people under the bus. I was very real and genuine. I didn't think they would have an issue seeing how strong my gameplay was. The only issue with my gameplay in my mind at that point was I wasn't as ego-driven as the rest of the other players. I didn't claim every move. Kiefer, Jed, Beth, and other people were very vocal on saying, I did that, I did. They were very vocal on claiming their moves to everybody. And I just thought that was a disadvantage to your game, because I'd rather claim my moves in a Final Two speech than I would when there's four people or five people left in the house. That's just how I saw it. If I claim my moves too early, people will see me as a bigger threat, and I may end up going home for that. So I wanted to leave my moves till the end. And that was kind of my theory, is like, you know what? Jury management will be my speech at the end. I'll convince them. They'll understand all in the end. And yeah. He did.
You did. Now, Beth, when she talked to me, she did put you last place in her rankings in terms of who she was most likely to vote for. So again, sort of defying the expectations there. So of course you win the final four HOH. You know, I think that, so prior to the veto, between Kiefer and Tara, who were you hoping was evicted here? Because I actually mentioned this, prior to the HOH competition, that obviously winning HOH and you being safe is best case scenario, but it prevents you from being the person that gets out Kiefer because you don't have the vote. So in some ways there are some drawbacks there. So when you were HOH, what was the ideal scenario for you in the, for how that, that week plays out?
Looking back on it, I think obviously I wanted to be the one who wins the veto, makes the decision. So it's my move, but then I couldn't be that person. But what's weird is I think I put Braden in a position to be that person. Mm-hmm. Looking back on it, I could not have brought Braden to the final two had he been the one to make that decision. Mm-hmm. But I also couldn't be the one to put Braden on the block. So that was an awkward situation for me because it's like I'm not putting him on the block because I need him in my final two. So Tara winning that veto was actually best case scenario. But it was scary to me because it's like I didn't know if she had it in her to cut Kiefer. Mm-hmm. And I planted what seeds I could. But again, if I pushed too hard to keep Braden, that would look fishy. Yep. Why do I want Braden to be here so bad?
Yeah, right? in the same way that her pushing Kyle way back when was sketchy, right?
Exactly. So I didn't push too hard. I was just more like, if Kiefer stands next to any of us, he wins the game. So I tried to ensure that she cut Kiefer, but in cutting Kiefer, she was cutting herself.
Yep.
Anybody who cut Kiefer was cutting themselves. And I know I put Braden in a position to do that, but the fact that he didn't win the veto was actually best case scenario for me. Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that that it is the case. If she had cut Braden there and you still win that final HOH, you're taking Tara over Kiefer.
Oh, 100%. Kiefer was convinced I would take him because we're friends, but like this game's not about friendship.
That was the thing. Oh man. I'm sorry, but like Kiefer kept telling Tara that you were going to take him to the final two and you weren't going to take him to the final. He was giving up his best argument and it wasn't even true.
I didn't understand that. Like, again, I always said, Kiefer always said a little too much. Just a little too much. There's no way I was taking Kiefer. Absolutely. I was there to win $100,000. If I stand beside Kiefer, I don't win. Mm-hmm. There was no, he was cooking for us all season and he was involved in every move since week one. My involvement in moves started on week after LaToya got out, pretty much. That's when my involvement started being stronger, but he was involved in every move from day one. There was no beating him, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
So you get to the final three HOH. Tara wins, Braden wins part one. It's you and Tara in part two. You can't be feeling great if Tara beats you here because now either one of them can win. Tara's probably not taking you. And if Braden wins, that gives him a better argument against you. But luckily, you crush Tara. And I mean, the second, I don't know about you. The second I saw what this competition was, I was like, Tara has no shot.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is perfect. This is exactly the comp I've been waiting for all season. Mm-hmm. Days and accuracy.
Yep.
That's perfect.
Yeah. So you crush Tara here. You get to the part three. And wow, what a nail biter that one was as well. I don't know if you've watched it back at all, but I'm sure Braden has told you, but like he locked in the wrong answer, immediately knew it was wrong, and it was too late. And that's what does it. You take home the final three HOH. You bring Braden. And a lot of the jury said at the time, and it seems like the sentiment afterward as well, is that the winner of that competition was the person that they were going to vote for. Have you heard any further explanation from the jury in terms of where their heads were at? I know some people have said that the speeches helped convince them as well. What kind of information do you have on that?
My understanding from speaking to them after is that, well, they've said different things. They've partially said that, you know what, they were going to see who won the three. Others said that they were very upset with me coming into that day and they weren't going to vote for me no matter what. And I think they also alluded to the fact that after having the jury deliberations with Anthony from season 7, I think it opened their minds to considering me more so than ever. And then I guess it sounds like my speeches and my answers to the questions kind of explained the relevance or the strength of my moves in this game or my positioning in this game. The reality about the game is it's about positioning. It's not about comp wins. It's not about, you know, ego. My game wasn't about that. My game was about positioning. I was always in the best position. I never went on the block. And I won the most comps. Like, to me, it was like, hold on. I won the most comps. I was never on the block. There was never a thought of evicting me. I was never a have-not. I beat Tara twice, who's one of the strong, like, I took her out twice, was one of the strongest players in the game. I was HOH 3 times in a row. Brayden, I brought him here. What are we talking about right now? Like, that was in my mind. I'm like, what are we even considering? Like, there's no doubt in my mind that I'm the strongest player standing here right now. But I still had to do that work of convincing them because I knew they were a little bit salty. When Victoria's question was about her being in my pocket, I was like, whoa. Somebody must have fed that to you because I've never said that to you. So somebody told you that. So I knew I had a lot of work to do when that was the narrative. But I mean, I just had to explain to them the moves I made and why I made them and my alliance, my moves, my comp wins. And then just overall, why my game was the game everybody comes to Big Brother and wants to play. That's the reality. I didn't get a chance to say that. I didn't have enough time to finish my speech. But I wanted to say, if you came to Big Brother, what kind of game would you want to play? One more like his or one more like mine? You want a game where you don't touch the block, where you win the most comps, and you're never on slop, really. That's the game I played. How could I not be the winner? That's how I saw it. I never packed my bags once, nor was I ever really worried about going home. That's the game you want to play. And I played that game. And I know it seems like I was a floater to some people, but how was I a floater? I was in the strongest alliance. And the people in my alliance wanted to let everybody know how strong they were. And I encouraged it. Be a showman. Have house meetings. Start drama. I'm here for all of it. But I'll be in the back, though. That was the role I played. And I just thought I was the strongest player. And I thought I should have won unanimously. I guess I didn't. But, I mean, to me, it was obvious. I knew I needed to do a good job in convincing the jury because I didn't make any of these points until the end. And I don't know if they could have seen it that way unless I spun it that way. Because the reality was when Beth left, I let her leave thinking I was a floater. I didn't really counter her argument. She's like, you've been a floater this whole game. And all I said was, have fun in Germany, Beth. I didn't really explain to her why I wasn't a floater, nor was I going to do that while she was still in the house.
Enjoy Germany, Beth.
I have a whole trilogy of these.
Do you want me to put Beth up?
Why don't you go on the block, Beth?
Enjoy Jerry, Beth.
That's my best trilogy.
That's where we were. Yeah, like I could have done a better job maybe explaining my moves, but I was scared to do that to anybody while they were still in the house, especially Beth. Like Beth had a really good way of taking what you said, spinning it, and turning it to a situation where she's against you. So I was worried about that.
Yes. So 6-1, you win the game, Big Brother Canada 9. How is it, first of all, like, how did it feel? Has it fully sunk in yet? I mean, it's been like a week and a half now.
Yeah. Has it sunk in? I mean, a little bit more than it did before.
Mm-hmm.
It's been overwhelming, like the love and support. has been overwhelming. Like, the fans are just really great. People have said nothing but really nice and kind things to me. And yeah, I think it's become a lot more real because now I'm like bumping into people like, oh my God, it's Ty from season. Like, that's crazy to me. Like, people actually recognize me, and they recognize, you know, the game and like the work I put in and how I played the game. I think it's really unbelievable that people come to me and they talk to me about like the different house guests and like what they thought. And it's like they all know us, but they don't know us. They weren't there, but they know so much. It's become real to me. But the fact that like, even though all of these people weren't here, they know things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's also, I mean, I think that people come off of the show. They will, whether the reception is positive or negative, often feel overwhelmed, but certainly positive feedback is better than not. I think you're definitely in a very great position where not only do you have, I think, a lot of supporters, a lot of people who were rooting for you to win the game, but also the season as a whole was so widely loved by the fans, at least the most hardcore of the fans. How has that felt? Is there a part of you that feels overwhelmed at all, or is it all just like, this is awesome?
I mean, I'm not really overwhelmed by the fans per se. So I think it's just awesome. Like, the fact that people are saying that this is probably the best season they ever saw, and it's the greatest ever, and they just really enjoyed it, makes me really happy. Like, I'm excited. I'm like, oh, really? Because I haven't watched it myself. I don't know how good it was. Like, I know I've talked about it while I was there. Like, this must be the greatest. But I don't know what it looks like on the show. Mm-hmm. I think some of the drama and some of the moves were crazy, but... I haven't seen it. I don't know what it looks like. People know more than I do, actually. When they come to me and tell me things, I'm like, oh, Jed said that? Beth said that? Kiefer said that? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I think, if I were to ever give advice to people coming out of the house, it's take what the fans tell you was said in the house with a little bit of a grain of salt. Some of them have an agenda. The episodes were definitely fun. Not always the most representative of what was happening in the house at all times, but that's, you know, that's the show for you. But it was definitely still fun the whole way through. I think something that you will enjoy watching back, especially, you know, the various announcer things. Your win also, I think, it means a lot to a lot of people. I know we talked about a little bit about this in your exit interview, you are the first Black winner of really the North American Big Brother. Tamar wins Big Brother Celebrity 2 in the U.S. But either way, I mean, this is something that a lot of people have really been. Not necessarily searching for, but hoping for and waiting for. I know so many people that this meant so much to be able to see this happen finally after over 20 years, that this finally something has come together here. That's a testament to you. It's a testament to, I think, Arissa and the people who put the season together. Is that something that is meaningful to you, that is like important to you, that you were a part of that?
Like I said earlier, like, yeah, it was super meaningful to me. And I know like what I said, maybe in going into that came off the wrong way to some people, and I didn't want it to be like that at all. The reality was, it's just like, I just believe that because I am Black, or because just in being Black, there are opportunities that we don't get, or that are not available to us because of the color of our skin. And I just want to be like, listen, I just want to ensure that we have this one though. Mm-hmm. This is the one we do get. And that's all I was trying to say. Like, I remember even growing up, all I would see on the TV is people who didn't look like me in positions of power, getting jobs, winning things. It was all kinds of things. I think there was even a time as a kid, I wished I was white, because it was like, you just didn't see anybody that looked like us. So, like, I just think in providing that opportunity to win something and be an example for, you know, like the next generation of kids or whoever it may be, and just be an inspiration, I think it was just bigger than me. It was just like, you know what, let me take this opportunity and try to ensure that I set an example for the next generation of people or people who are watching, because to see somebody who looks like you win something like this, I think would just mean so much. I think if I was a viewer, I would be like, wow, I could go on that show and actually win. Because there was a time when Black people would go on reality shows and they would look crazy. Mm. And I just thought this wasn't the case this season. It looked like we belonged and it looked like, you know, we actually had a chance. And I just thought that was amazing. I think, like you alluded to, like Larissa and the rest of the production team did a great job in casting this season. I think I would have been happy with whoever would have won, but I really wanted to see it reflect the diversity and inclusion that we had this season, and it did. And I was happy with that.
Yeah, you had some, I think at least one of those conversations you had with, I think, Brayden. Made an episode. It was a great segment. I know that you also had conversations. I don't think this one made the episodes, but about sort of, you know, masculinity and, you know, needing to act like you're not scared. I know that, like, I loved hearing that conversation on the feeds. It just, like, I'm like, you I think represented yourself so well and the show so well. In terms of the topics that you were able to bring to the house and the kinds of conversations that you were able to have, and I just personally would want to thank you for that, because I appreciate those conversations being had as well. So so thank you.
Oh, like, I mean, it was just me. Thank you for recognizing that. I mean, it was just me being me. Like, I just wanted to be able to have those real honest conversations, because there's just things that I don't think we talk about enough. And I just wanted people to be like, being a male doesn't mean this. You know, you never have to be in a box, and you never have to see being black as a certain way either. I just believe that as people, we can be whoever we want to be. And I just want to be able to communicate that message. And I just want to be my authentic self at the same time. So awesome. Thank you, Tara, for seeing that.
All right. Well, I've definitely taken up plenty of your time here. But is there anything else that you want to talk about that you feel like we didn't touch on, or anything else? I think I'm sure that people want to hear. I should probably ask. So keep that in mind as you answer this question. What's the relationship like with your castmates right now? Like, who are you talking to? Who are you friends with? They want to know all the drama. That's what they care about.
So put it this way: as the winner, I feel like I have the least issues with anybody, because I love everyone. You guys help me win.
Yeah, I got no problems.
I have no issues. I'm not mad at any of you. Who have I spoken to? Like, the most I've spoken to, I actually spoke to Brayden yesterday. I hadn't spoken to him in a while, but we FaceTimed for a bit yesterday. I speak to Jed pretty regularly. And I would say that's the most. Jed LaToya. Kiefer. Sorry. See, I'm forgetting people. I actually spoke to Kiefer today. So LaToya, Jed, the Sunsetters. Mm-hmm. I mostly speak to the Sunsetters. And I've texted Beth a little bit. I think for her, I think she needs a little time. I understand that, like, her situation is not the most favorable, because I've seen the internet. I've seen what's happening on Twitter. I haven't been on Twitter too much, but I know that, you know, she's going through a tough time, and I would love to be there to support her as a friend, because I do have lots of love for Beth. Like, let's be real. Like, she was part of my alliance. We worked together all game, even though I said, have fun in jury, Beth. And why don't you go up on the block, Beth? Like, Beth was one of my closest allies in the game. I you know what, I'm here for her as a friend, and I support her. She did say some things, obviously, I didn't agree with, and a lot of people didn't agree with, but I think they're a learning opportunity for her and others to understand that certain things are just not okay. But I mean, I've spoken to her a little bit, spoken to Brayden, Victoria, Rohan. Like, I talk to them here and there, but I would say I talk mostly with Jed, LaToya, Kiefer, and I keep forgetting, but the Sunsetters. I talk to the Sunsetters the most. Mm-hmm. Tara and I joke around sometimes too. Tara's kids look like they're good. They're big fans of me. Which is funny because Tara, I swear you hated me, but your kids seem to like me. But you know what? Tara and I's relationship, I don't think, I haven't seen all the episodes, but I don't know if it was accurately captured throughout the season. I mean, her and I had really, some really good deep conversations. I love Tara. I know she really didn't want me to win because she's an ultimate competitor and I wasn't working with her all the game, and she felt like she was expendable to me. Which she kind of was, because we weren't working together. Like, let's be honest, she never wanted to work with me. And I'm like, well, if you go home, I don't really care because you don't want to work with me. But I do have lots of love for the whole cast. Like I said, I have no issues with anybody. Jed and I have talked about getting a place. I mean, it may happen. I think it'd be really fun. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it would be like, but I know that shirtless chefs would go on and it would be a great time. So it's like, yeah, like I love the Sunsetters. I love the cast. I think, you know, I'll be good friends with a lot of them going forward. Like, I see that for myself. I do obviously need my time alone because that was a lot. Mm-hmm. I think I want to do some traveling and just, you know, relax. I don't think I've fully relaxed yet.
Yeah.
But, I still talk to them from time to time. Like, only we understand what it's like. I think the past house guests have really helped too. Like, I've spoken with some of them, and they really are a great resource for us to ask for when we want to ask for help or ask, like, how do we deal with coming out of this? Because it was a lot.
Yeah. And it's hard because there aren't a lot of people that understand what you went through. I love it when the alumni help each other out there, because it's definitely needed, I think.
100%. Yeah.
Any like future plans? Some people they go on the show and now, you know, they sort of like it changes their life and they sort of want to go in a different direction. Where are you at with life? Do you have any plans, or are you just kind of chilling for now?
That's a great question. Do I have plans? Yes and no. So, like, obviously I was an urban planner coming into the show, and I do plan to go back to work. But it seems like obviously I have this new platform, and the question is, what do I do next? What do I want to do with that? And I don't fully have the answer to that question. Do I want to, you know, do more reality TV? I don't know. I always joked around when I was on the show. I was always saying, I'm not here to be on TV. I just want the money. But I did have a lot of fun.
Like, being on TV can make you money, as you learn.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's like, do I want to be on a show, another show? You know, potentially. Will my job let me do that again? I don't know. Does that mean maybe I shouldn't have a job? I don't know. Like, there's really, like, I don't know. What I will say is, like, I'm open to different opportunities. The whole reason I went on the show, because it was an opportunity that came up that I thought would be cool and a learning experience and something that would open more doors for me. And those doors have opened. Now I just really got to decide which doors I want to walk through. And I think that's where I'm at.
Yeah. All right. all right. So anything else that we didn't touch on that you would like to bring up before we wrap up here?
No, I think we touched on everything. Like, I just want to say, I was always loyal to my Sunsetters before. You know what I mean? Like, I was loyal to the soil. I would never turn on them, but they turned on me first. And my Sunsetters in the sauce. I love them. I was always about my people. Protect your people. But if your people don't protect you, you can't protect them anymore. I just want to say, like, that was probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I will need therapy, probably. But I recommend therapy for everyone, just to, you know, talk about your problems. But that was hard. That was really hard. And I really enjoyed it. And I just want to say, thank you, Taryn, for having me. Because even this helped, because I get to talk through the whole thing and really, you know, it's good to talk to somebody about every move and what you did and why you did it. And for me, it's like, it really reiterates to myself that trusting your gut is, for me, is the right thing. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do a lot of the game. Like, not like sometimes I analyze the decisions I made after I made them, but all of them were just gut instincts. Like, this is right. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that it worked out for me. I have no regrets because it worked out for me. And you know what? I made a lot of really good friends. I made a lot of really good connections, and hardest thing I've ever done, but I wouldn't change it for the world. I love the people I met. And I mean, I would encourage anybody who's interested to apply and try it, because your life will never be the same. Huh?
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ty. It was great talking with you. I loved talking through your game. Where can people find you if they want to, you know, keep up with you or whatever?
They can find me on my Instagram at Tashawn X Carter. Or they can find me on Twitter at, I think it's Tashawn BBCan9. My mom might answer you, but I'm there. Like, you know, I check it. But yeah, my Instagram is probably the best place to find me, at Tashawn X Carter.
All right, there you go. Yeah, that's how I got in touch. All right, well, that's what we have for you guys. You can, of course, find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong, or on Twitter at Armstrong Taryn. I also have an Instagram account that I use to contact people with, but I haven't posted on there for like 2 years. So you can find me there. I did take over the Rob as a Podcast Instagram the other day. That was fun. But here we go. Interview with Ty. Thank you guys for joining us. And, you know, we'll see you next time.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.